On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to another edition of On the Radar. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'll be with you until 14:30, keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the stories shaping our nation and the world. On the Radar is your go-to news and current affairs bulletin, bringing you the latest updates on politics, society, the economy, culture, and everything in between. We go beyond the headlines to explore the stories that matter most to everyday Namibians, asking the tough questions, celebrating local victories, and amplifying the voices that deserve to be heard. Now, today is the 28th of May, 2025, a landmark date in our national consciousness. Namibia observes its inaugural Genocide Remembrance Day, honoring the memory of the Herero and Nama people who were brutally persecuted during 1904 to 1908 genocide under German colonial rule. This day is about remembrance, recognition, and the ongoing call for justice. Throughout the program, we'll touch on key developments related to this historic observance, along with the latest in local and international news. And don't forget, On the Radar is a space for you too. Share your views by calling us on 083-288-401. Now, whether it's a comment, a question, or a shout out, we want to hear from you. Now, stay with us. This is On the Radar, the news, the people, the pulse of Namibia. First off, on our news bulletin today, Namibia's construction sector painted a contrasting picture in April 2025, with Windhoek and Swakopmund heading in opposite directions. Windhoek saw a sharp 28% monthly drop in building approvals, signaling a slowdown, while Swakopmund recorded a slight uptick, reflecting tentative coastal recovery. Year-to-date, Windhoek's approvals fell by 10%, but Swakopmund surged by 69%, driven by growing interest in coastal projects. However, the value of approved plans plummeted in both cities, down 87% in Windhoek and 44% in Swakopmund, highlighting the absence of large-scale developments compared to 2024. Now, the statistics are according to Simone Storm's Bulletin on Building Statistics for April 2025. Residential projects dominated the sector, accounting for over 75% of approvals in both cities, while commercial and industrial activity remained sluggish. Competitions also declined, or completions also declined, with Windhoek's completed buildings nearly halving in value year to date. Swakopmund mirrored this trend, though April brought a temporary rebound for Windhoek. Analysts attribute the slowdown to investor caution and a focus on housing needs, despite broader economic challenges like high debt costs and import price volatility. Looking ahead, Namibia's construction sector is projected to grow by 8.5% in 2025, supported by infrastructure spending and monetary easing. Windhoek is expected to stabilize with smaller residential projects, while Swakopmund's recovery depends on financing and a more diverse pipeline. Government investment in water and energy could boost demand, but sustained growth will require strategic policies to navigate risks and unlock the sector's potential. Now, we've reached out to transport economist John Sanderson as we speak about the construction industry and how it could potentially affect us and what we could be doing about it. Good afternoon, John Sanderson, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Happy. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Very well, thank you very much.
Okay. Now, according to Simone Storm's building plan, values declined by 87% month on month, despite only 28% fewer approvals. Now, what does this imply about the price elasticity of construction investment in Windhoek's residential segment?
Well, Happy, to be honest with you, Before we get to the answer of those questions, I would have wanted us to maybe run through a few important things that is concerning the construction industry and how it works and contributes to the overall economy in terms of the GDP. Would that be fine, or you can spend a minute or two on it?
Of course.
Okay. Now, I think firstly, before we start, we need to understand that the construction industry is one of the industries in the Namibian economy that's creating quite a number of jobs, especially in the rural areas and smaller urban centers like Tsumeb or Chivorongo, Koffiefontein, in the similar times in Namibia. Mm-hmm. People are more dependent on construction jobs than in urban areas.
Yeah.
So given the decline in the values of building plan approvals, as reported by Timoni Storm, it gives us a signal that, you know, poverty is on the rise, given that construction industry employs at least, but it's quite a number of people employed in the construction industry. I believe in the region of 50,000 people or more.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. But the implication is that if this trend continues, we will lose up to even, say, 10 to 15,000 jobs. I believe a number of jobs has already been lost, so employment has already been affected.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with our youth having a high unemployment rate, this only contributes to the general unemployment rate in Namibia, where skilled construction workers are sitting without jobs. We also need to consider and take into account and digest the fact or the facts that our construction industry and our economy in general is very much influenced as to what is happening in the international markets.
Yeah.
and globally.
Mm-hmm.
So we have separate issues like some construction materials, cement, steel, etc., that's being imported from other countries, and the international volatility in terms of oil prices, etc., has contributed also a lot to the increase of our construction materials,
mm-hmm.
which is also a factor influencing the number of building plans approved, number of projects undertaken, etc., etc. So there are many faces towards this problem of the construction industry declining.
Yeah.
And if it even further declines, you know, there's a correlation between the construction industry and our GDP.
Mm.
And currently we're standing at around about 0.7 is a correlation between what's happening in our construction industry.
Yeah.
And its positive or negative impact on our economy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this trend continues at least for the next 6 to 18 months, that coefficient will drop down to 0.5, indicating that our economy will be less sensitive to what's happening in the construction industry. This can have bad and good consequences.
Yeah.
The good is that we will not be dependent to a larger extent as the economy has been in the past on the construction industry. But the bad thing also is that if that coefficient goes below 0.5, then it could mean that our economy may grow, but without any job creation, especially from the construction industry. So it is really a very sensitive, you know, point to achieve the target of 0.5 at least. We need to diversify our economy, you know, develop mining, develop our green energy projects, a green energy industry, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
But in the short run, we will feel at least 3 to 5 years, if this continue for the next, as I said, 6 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Sorry. we will feel the brunt, especially the poor people will feel the brunt of this slowdown or this stagnation in the construction industry. And this again boils down to other issues in the economy. People has to be, you know, reskilled. The youth need to look into careers in ITC, green energy, green construction, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Which is not really marketed to them in Namibia at the moment, and which in any case is the direction that we are going to go into in the next 5 years. We have a number of solar projects in Namibia coming up and currently being in operation or being established. So yeah, coming back to your questions, what that basically tells is that, you know, the value of body plan approvals has declined at 87%. This is on a month-on-month basis, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Correct.
You know, on a month-to-month basis, you know, there's not really a lot that we can deduce from it. We should rather look at a longer period for at least a 12-month period, because it will give us a better indication or better signals as to what's happening with regards to prices. But coming back to that, in this case, it shows or it signals to us that due to the price increases in fuel, construction materials, as I explained earlier, mostly being imported, we do not manufacture or produce a lot of our own materials, even though we do have the natural resources. It indicates and tells us that the construction industry is very price sensitive. So in terms of elasticity, when say for example the price of steel goes up by 10%, it might tell us that due to that decline that we have you've just mentioned, that our construction industry's price elasticity could easily be in the range of 1.4 to 1.5. So which means a 10% increase in our prices of materials and inputs will result in a decline of, say, 30% to 40% in demand for building construction projects in Namibia. Also coupled with that is our exchange rate, of course, which is also being influenced, which makes products more expensive from what it is being imported. And then also have another barrier, interest rates charged by our banks. Interest rates are currently relatively high. And all of that, put together in one pot, mixing it all up, creates that price necessity that we're currently experiencing of, say, 1.4 to 1.5 in Namibia. So this trend, as I said, if this trend continues, we will have difficulty, we have job losses, we have reduced investor confidence in funding private investment initiatives in Namibia in construction, for example, our green hydrogen projects, low-cost housing projects. Financing will become more difficult to obtain. Our government is facing a very high debt to income between quotation income ratio. It also make it difficult for a government to obtain financing, for example, low-cost housing. So there's a lot that one has to think about when you talk about price elasticity. I've been trying to explain it in a way that is understandable to our listeners. If that current trend that has started back in 2023, if it continues, in fact, it goes far back as 2020 when COVID started, and COVID really did some damage, and some damage we might still feel or experience that some of the damage if our economic situation and maybe doesn't change in the next 6 to 18 months, it will leave permanent scars on our economy and our people.
Mm.
If we do not drastically, address these issues through some immediate policy interventions in the immediate short term,
okay.
If I can put it that way.
Okay. What about the $12.8 billion infrastructure budget? Will it realistically offset the slump in private commercial construction? Or will physical constraints such as the $13.7 billion debt servicing limit its impact?
Okay, well, when it comes to government spending, government spending is a very important way of trying to stabilize an economy, especially in the light where the private sector is not really investing or are really active in the economy in a specific sector, in this case the construction sector. So, you know, there are also a few other points that comes in which one has to consider when you look at government spending. Number one, the first question we need to ask ourselves is that 12.8 billion infrastructure budget, where will it be spent? On what will it be spent? My understanding is that most of that budget will be spent on roads and housing. If I'm not mistaken, I speak under correction. That is very important because those type of projects in construction provides direct, immediate jobs for our unemployed, skilled construction workers and our youth who's also looking for jobs in the job market. So yes, the sooner those projects are implemented, the little bit less our people will feel the brunt of this economic slowdown that they're currently experiencing in the private sector. Of course, another way it's manifesting itself is through less building plans being applied for approval and a lower value of business building plans approved eventually and implemented.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How big of a threat is exchange rate volatility to construction growth, given Namibia's reliance on imported steel and cement? Could local market or local material production ease the risk?
Okay. Now, when it comes to exchange rates and the volatility of the Namibian dollar towards foreign currencies in terms of the Namibian dollar reacts to changes of whatever might be taking place somewhere else in the world, for example, the UK, in the Ukraine war, sorry, my apologies. The Ukraine war is still ongoing.
Yeah.
The ludicrous, approach of the American president, Mr. Donald Trump, trying to bully everybody, trying to bully Africa. Trying to bully just anybody, everybody in the world, it leaves a lot of speculation out there. You didn't know which way, you know, the pendulum is going to swing or what's going to happen, really.
Yeah.
Coupled with things like the oil prices, steel prices, and cement prices, other construction input materials, prices. Given that we import in the region of 70%, I believe, of our construction materials. Now, the exchange rate, it will definitely have an effect on how much we import and what we import. Normally, when you have such high exchange rates, like we are currently starting to experience right now, it also is coupled with higher interest rates. All of that put together, it will really deal a very, a concise blow to our construction industry, boiling down to our unemployment, et cetera, in our country.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in a very difficult, but not impossible position to get out of with some immediate and direct policy interventions by our Namibian government, and the willingness of the private sector to not to be afraid and to calculate their risks and to make certain investments and endeavor in certain projects.
So, Mr. Sanderson, what can we, the people, or the private sectors and lay people, do to counter this, if moving forward and for the benefit of ourselves and the country?
Well, in view of the construction sector, what we can do is, as people out there, we should move away from the conventional training that we undertake and in which we invest normally. As I mentioned earlier, we should start to look at training in the areas of green energy, green construction, ITC and related sectors, electricity sector, more specifically in solar, hydrogen energy, and green construction. Mm-hmm. There are few opportunities in Namibia for those type of trainings, but listeners are welcome to get a hold of you, and I will share with you guys information as to where to undertake such training, what is available in our country, and if you guys wish, we can put out something to entice the private sector to reskill their workers in this new upcoming and currently establishing sectors in Namibia as the green energy, et cetera, mm-hmm. To invest in the youth in terms of training in these new areas. So we as a people, we must realize that we are moving away from BRICS, and we are moving towards, we could put it that way, batteries, because, let's include as well electric vehicles, mm-hmm. Electric vehicle maintenance training, et cetera, because those are a couple of things that we need to go into as a people. We need to realize for ourselves, mm-hmm. we cannot just enroll and study administration, the VTCs or any institution. Sorry. But we need to research where we need to go and what we need to do and what we need to secure jobs to ensure that later on we have skilled people in construction, but they're not skilled in specific areas.
Yeah.
They're not trained in specific areas. Then what again happens is people will be imported from elsewhere. You understand? Yeah. That is what we need to do as a people from the side of the government. The government should look into suspend maybe VAT and import duties on construction materials. Government should try and fast track current projects in construction to counter the immediate and short term and the medium term impacts of this decline in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. That is just a few pointers on it to have a look into. So our Harambee Prosperity Plan projects, which hasn't been rolled out yet, we need to accelerate those really and drastically prioritize those for implementation, as well as implementing labor-based or labor-intensive projects to create jobs and to provide incomes to our people.
Okay. Mr. John Sanderson, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
You are most welcome, and all the best to you guys.
Okay.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Oulium Nangeshifa, Noahara Pushivifa, Oma Kuroyo Kupitiramo Horiki Radio Station, Eagle FM, Enyamukuro Olongaha, ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konora hetatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa konora hetatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opomone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Namibia's inaugural Genocide Remembrance Day represents a profound and long overdue acknowledgement of one of the darkest chapters in the nation's history. The 1904 to 1908 genocide of the Herero and Nama people under German colonial rule. It marks a pivotal national milestone in recognizing historical injustices and creating a space for collective mourning, remembrance, and dialogue about justice and repatriation. Now, between 1904 and 1908, the German Empire launched a brutal campaign to suppress resistance by the Herero and Nama people who had opposed colonial exploitation and land dispossession in what was then known as German Southwest Africa, which is now modern-day Namibia. This campaign, characterized by extermination orders issued by General Lothar von Trotha, led to the death of over 80% of the Herero population and over 50% of the Nama population, a tragedy widely recognized by scholars and human rights advocates as the first genocide of the 20th century. Survivors were forcibly relocated to concentration camps such as those on Shark Island and in Swakopmund, where they were subjected to forced labor, starvation, medical experimentation, and inhuman treatment. The day chosen for Genocide Remembrance Day, May 28, is historically significant as it marks the 1907 German colonial decree to shut down their concentration camps. However, for many victims, the damage was already irreversible. This year's theme, the 2025 theme and its significance, is that this year's commemoration is held under the theme Remembrance and Memorization towards genuine repatriations and restorative justice. This theme underscores a broader demand from affected communities for recognition, apology, restitution, and reconciliation. It also comes at a time when ongoing bilateral talks between Namibia and Germany on genocide repatriations continue to face criticism for lacking genuine consultation with descendants of the victims and failing to meet expectations for meaningful repatriative justice. Namibia's Genocide Remembrance Day not only honors the memory of the life lost, but also confronts the enduring legacy of colonialism. It challenges both Namibians and the international community, especially Germany, to move beyond symbolic gestures and engage in truthful reckoning, repatriative action, and healing. By institutionalizing this day, Namibia is creating a historical space for reflection, education, and advocacy for justice that has been delayed for over a century. Let's now take a listen to the Vice President of the Republic of Namibia, Lucia Witbooi, as she speaks on Genocide Day.
It is my honor to stand before you today on the occasion of the first ever commemoration of the Genocide Remembrance Day, 28 May 2025. Here in the capital city, Windhoek. As we commemorate this significant day, it is important to note that the Genocide Remembrance Day in Namibia holds profound national importance as it honors the memory of the thousands of lives lost during the early 20th century genocide perpetrated against the Herero and the Nama people and communities, and the San and the Damara people were not spared. This day serves not only as a moment of collective reflection, but also as a vital opportunity to acknowledge historical injustices and promote healing, reconciliation, and nation building. By commemorating this painful chapter of Namibia's history, the nation affirms its commitment to peace, stability, and justice. Equally, it also educates our younger generations about the resilience of their ancestor and foster national unity. May this day be a day of somber reflection, for it to take us into memory line, how our forefathers and mothers stood firm in claiming what is rightfully theirs, rightfully ours today. Having said this, it is now my honor and pleasure to introduce the keynote speaker of this historic day in the Namibian history. Her Excellency's extraordinary, remarkable journey started at a young age when she refused to bow down to the act of colonialism and the apartheid government. Without fear, she chose the path of exile, dedicating her life to the struggle for the Namibian independence. Her contributions to the development of Namibia, both before and after independence, are exceptional and have had a transformative impact on the lives of countless Namibians. Following independence, she continued to serve the nation in various capacities and held various ministerial positions, serving the Namibian government uninterrupted for the past 35 years. Her enduring dedication and service have been a foundation of Namibia's governance. Amongst the ministerial positions she has held includes, she was the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Minister of Women and Child Welfare, Minister of Information and Broadcasting, Minister of Environment and Tourism, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Deputy Prime Minister, and Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, and Vice President of the Republic of Namibia, contributed significantly to the socio-economic development of Namibia. In 2024, she made history as the first female president of the Republic of Namibia, and later, on 21st March 2025, she was inaugurated as the first female president of the Republic of Namibia. Her achievements extends within the structures of the Swabo Party, where she was elected as the first female vice president of Swabo Party at the 2017 Congress, and subsequently became the first female president of the Swabo Party. Fellow Namibians, the person I am introducing here today is not only a seasoned politician, but also a highly educated individual with, among others, qualifications she holds a master's degree in diplomatic studies. In 2020, her services and contributions to Namibia's struggle for independence and her leadership in international diplomacy, gender equality, and Pan-Africanism were internationally recognized by the University of Tanzania, earning her an honorary doctorate.
The President of the Republic of Namibia, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, also had something to say at Genocide Remembrance Day, which is taking place today at Parliament Gardens.
Having recognized our forebears, I would like at this point to extend our sincere appreciations to my predecessors, the founding presidents, father of the Namibian nation, and the leader of the Namibian revolution, Comrade Dr. Sam Sufi-Shuna Nujoma. May his soul rest in eternal peace. Our second president, His Excellency Dr. Hifikepunye Pohamba, and the third president, His Excellency Dr. Hage Geingob, also may his soul rest in peace. And of course, our fourth president, His Excellency Nangolo Mbumba, who's present here with us. I commend them for their noble and courageous efforts in building our nation through our shared history. It was under their leadership that we started discussing the most appropriate manner for us to remember the first genocide of the 20th century perpetuated against our people, in particular the Ovaherero and the Nama, by the German Imperial forces. This day will go in the history of our country as we are officially commemorating it as Namibians for the first time in our nation history. A day for us to remember the lives of our forefathers, our people who have lost their lives in the struggle for the motherland. Director of Ceremonies, we are gathered at Parliament Garden to remember the genocide that was unleashed 121 years ago in our land. We are here because on the 2nd of October, 1904, the notorious General von Trotter of the German army issued the first extermination order against the Ovaherero. We are also gathered here because on the 22nd of April, 1904, the same brutal von Trotter issued an extermination order against the Nama people. Sadly, between 1904 and 1908, more than 100,000 Ovaherero and Nama people were brutally massacred by the German colonial government under the policy of extermination and genocide. Many people from the two communities were forced into concentration camps where they were starved to death and their skulls were taken to Germany for so-called scientific research. These activities has not really only affected the targeted community, but the scars, we are all feeling them today. For example, up to now, with our large territory, Namibia has one of the lowest population. Definitely, what do you expect when during that time we lost so many of our citizens? It will take us years to recover. Those hundreds acts, of course, are now part of our collective history of resistance and resilience in our march to freedom. Namibia is today free, peaceful, and you are now focusing on the task of building a country in which each citizen can fulfill their potential. However, we shall never forget the emotional, psychological, economical, and cultural scars which remains inactive in the affected communities and the broader fibers of our nation. In that vein, our presence at this occasion marks a decisive step towards in forward in dealing with the past by collectively remembering and sharing the pain of the directly affected over Herero and Nama communities. No doubt, during that frightful genocide chapter in our history, those two communities went through the most hundreds devastating and traumatic period in their lives. Against this
background,
Okumbena ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele owuna osheenditho. Owuna aaniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka yina oondjodhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye e to pewa epresenda 45% dongushu yoshiyenditho shoye. Muule ashike wemitetelo 45%. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshipumbwa. Tu dengela nena ko 061-00-6-6. Ano ko 061-00-6-6. Oshipulela ko AutoCash.
By proclamation number 19 of 2024, the 28th of May was declared a day of remembrance of genocide and a public holiday. Looking at the date, we all know who has signed that proclamation. And I'm very happy that I'm making this announcement in the presence of our fourth president, Dr. Nangolo Mbumba, who on that day, he signed that proclamation declaring 28th of May, a remembrance day of genocide and a public holiday. Thank you very much, Comrade President, our fourth president. We are therefore here for the first time as a nation to remind ourselves of the dark days of 1904, 1908. Genocide Remembrance Day, which is a public holiday, should be a powerful reminder about our shared resolve to continue the path of nation building, reconciliation, and healing of the wounds of the past. This day must always make us to recognize what our brave ancestors endure in defense of this land, the land of the brave, thus inspiring us to defend our country's independence and all our natural resources for the benefit of all Namibians today and in the future. Director of Ceremony.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Welcome back. The Wednesday's edition of the Villager e-paper is out now. And it's back to stories that matter. Here's a quick peek at what's making headlines. Border to be closed for 9 vegetable imports in June. Big changes are coming to local agriculture and import policies. What does this mean for farmers and consumers? Well, find out inside. Generational farm workers allocated land, a historic shift in land reform as families who have walked the land for generations finally get a stake in it. Nandinda Itua's diplomatic SADC tour. Namibia's president steps onto regional stage with a mission of unity and diplomacy. Construction sector faces mixed signals. Regional trends clash as Namibia's building boom meets moments of uncertainty. Namibia hosts the World Federation for Democratic Youth General Assembly. The country takes the spotlight on the global stage with youth activism and solidarity in focus. Now get the full scoop on the stories and more. Grab your copy of the Villager e-paper today for all the latest in social and economic news. Now, one update sent straight to your phone? Well, stay ahead of the curve by subscribing to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel. Just send a text message on 081-200-4144 and never miss a headline. In other news, Namibia is making impressive strides in the global startup landscape, with its capital city, Windhoek, now ranking 512th in the 2025 Startup Blink Global Startup Ecosystem Index, the highest upward movement among Southern African cities. Windhoek is expected to break into the top 500 soon, a milestone that would mark a significant achievement for the country's growing startup environment. On a national level, Namibia has reached its best ever position, ranking 85th globally in the same index. This makes Namibia the second highest ranked country in Southern Africa, highlighting the country's increasing efforts to foster innovation and entrepreneurship. The Startup Blink Index evaluates over 1,000 cities and 100 countries based on startup activity, infrastructure, business environment, and investment levels. Namibia's rise reflects a growing number of support initiatives, government involvement, and interest from investors. Even as the country continues to grapple with challenges such as limited infrastructure, funding gaps, and a shortage of skilled talent. Economist Ngino Menoveri Erastus, speaking to Eagle FM, acknowledged the significance of this achievement. However, he also raised concerns about the lack of coordinated effort across sectors to sustain and accelerate this growth. Let's now weigh in on that interview.
I'm joined by economist Nginomeno Vale Erastos. Good afternoon to you. This is Namibia, where we have those that are economically interested and are aware of where we stand as a country economically. Do you mind sharing with the listeners what is meant when we say Namibia is close to the top 500 in global startup ecosystem index?
When it comes to economic building, remember, economic building requires certain settings to be in place, meaning it requires certain environment, it requires a certain ecosystem to exist for you to be able to build a business, for people to be able to turn their ideas into concepts and to also into practical businesses. Now, we need to measure ourselves, and you cannot improve something that you are not measuring because you do not know how you are doing. Now, all of us are talking about that, the policymakers are talking about, yeah, we need to grow the economy, we need to add value, we need to do different things. But those are just statements of what you wish to achieve. And if you do not now know that, is it possible for startups in Namibia or small entrepreneurs or those with ideas to start business, then how will you achieve that? So that is where now there are certain entities around the world who are measuring or comparing countries in terms of their environment. So that is how now how Namibia now is also measured or assessed to say, how are you doing as a country in enabling startups to flourish in your country? Okay. That is what the measurement is all about. So when we are saying now that yeah, Namibia is in the top five or in a whatever, we are just being literally told that according to what you colleagues are doing, this is what you are able to push to enable people to start businesses in your country. Because remember, a startup is a small entity, meaning it's an idea that has been turned into a concept, that has been turned into a practical example or into a practical business. So we're being ranked in Southern Africa or wherever to be in the top 500 globally, or for us to achieve the 74% growth in the region, it just means, yes, we are doing certain things to ensure that the ecosystem for entrepreneurship flourish.
Yes.
So meaning that it just means that, yes, we have taken certain steps to allow Nangula, Kanjengo, Kariko to start a business. It just means that we have also reduced some of the hurdles that Kariko and Nangula, regardless of whether they are in a country, to start a business. But again, we are yet not there. But we have moved, we have made some practical steps to enable people to start a business.
How does Namibia's startup ecosystem compare to other Southern African countries in terms of innovation, funding, and infrastructure?
Yeah, it's now a mouthful for you to do a comparison, like with South Africa or like Botswana or like with Zambia. Like for South Africa, South Africa is more advanced. South Africa is a population. South Africa is a various systems that are in place that enable people just to move from step to the other. But in countries like Namibia and Zambia, where we are still actually fixing certain laws.
Yes.
And like in the case of Namibia, we have an issue of communication.
Yes.
Like where you have NIPDB, where you have NCCI, then there you have BIPA. Then there you have certain ministries. There you have BIPA who is saying, I want to register a business, you don't do this. There you have FIC who is saying that you need to comply with this type of laws. There you have NIPD who is saying that we should be able and necessary, we want people to start a business. So when you have such type of miscommunication among the regulators or the people who are responsible for fixing the environment, then it becomes very difficult for you to compare yourself to anybody because we are contradicting ourselves. We are still behind. We are still having a lot of work to do. You have Basecamp, you have a Startup Namibia, you have CC Hub that are really doing certain great work in fixing or in assisting our startups. But our bigger institutions that are responsible for enabling and creating an environment are still very far. Unfortunately, this is where the problem. So, and again, every country is moving in a different direction. Every country is trying to fix their policies. Zambia is doing whatever they are doing. Angola is still coming a long way from certain political and historical injustice that has been there. Yes, Botswana has been a bit, because of their population, they are able to implement certain things more efficiently. Yeah. Zimbabwe is also still a political and old structure that is in place. They are still working on certain things. Mozambique has been war-torn. So you see, all of us in Southern Africa, we are all battling certain historical issues and old laws that were not, that are not supportive of the current market, old financial system that are not supportive of the current ecosystem that you want. So it becomes very, very difficult to actually compare these countries, except for South Africa. South Africa have been moving a bit differently, given their financial system and given their population. But the rest of us, we all are dealing with certain policy-related matters and the colonial and historical and other inadequate things that are in place. So it becomes very, very difficult because we are all dealing with different issues. Yes. Yes, Namibia now, to a certain extent, we are now having policymakers that are opening up. We are now having lobby bodies and institutions like NIPDB and SSCI and others, and also the base camp colleagues that are really doing a great work in terms of creating the awareness needed of what needs to be done for us to fix the ecosystem. But we have a long way to go. And as much as there are statements and high-level statements do not mean we are...
No running! Grow up so fast.
Come here, guys. Who wants to watch their favorite show on GoTV?
Your family's favorite moments are made better with GoTV's shows. We've got loads of local, international, and kids' channels, and all the football you need from the comfort of your home.
You can also watch your favorite shows wherever you are with GoTV Stream. Stick with GoTV and let's go together. GoTV. Love it.
Let's now resume that conversation between Menavari Erastus and Joseph Jeremiah.
The addiction between BPIFIC, Minister of Finance, and the NCC and others. We are still very far to compare ourselves to our peers. So there is a lot that needs to be done for us to fix the ecosystem. And the basic thing that needs to be done is all of us need to understand what ecosystem is required for an idea to translate into a concept and into a practical business. Because registering the business alone is not enough if I don't be practical doing the work. Yes. So what is that ecosystem required for an agricultural entrepreneur, for a manufacturer, you know, for a digital innovator or entrepreneur? Because all different entrepreneurs, they require different ecosystem. Even if there are cross-cutting matters that need to be solved, we all need to understand what we need to do from the financial, from the regulatory, and from the policy point of view for us to compare ourselves to the others.
What can Namibia improve to create a conductive startup ecosystem?
As I've alluded there, that it starts with the basics.
Yes.
I will implore, like a policymaker, just attend, let me say base camp.
Yes.
Just attend the base camp event. And you listen to entrepreneurs, different entrepreneurs.
Yes.
From the digital, from the ICT, from agriculture, from manufacturing, and all that. Once you listen to them,
yes,
and again, listen to entrepreneur beyond Windhoek, because the tour guides in Kunene are dealing with different issues.
Yes.
The farmers in Karas are dealing with different issues. The farmers and the ICT colleagues in Korengur are dealing with different issues.
Yes.
So the basic thing, the basic step, we need the policymakers and people of influence that are given a task to build the ecosystem, to listen to entrepreneurs at the grassroots level. Don't make all these fancy conferences at whatever in Windhoek. No, listen to the entrepreneurs themselves as they talk. Listen to different entrepreneurs from tourism to IC to agriculture to manufacturing, everywhere. Then you get to have the context of what you need to do to improve the ecosystem. Right now, we have policymakers that are making laws and policies while they are sitting in their offices.
Yes.
Many of them never ran a business. Many of them, perhaps, they have tendered. Just because you have tendered, it doesn't mean you are running a business. You need to listen to people who are doing things without even depending on government tenders. Then you get to understand what they go through for them to be at the level where they are. Then now we can move. Once you are well informed, then we can now start moving brick by brick to create the type of ecosystem that we need. And again, I caution, don't listen to foreign investors who are coming with their capital. No. Because we are moving and we are making decisions based on people coming from Denmark or Europe who are having capital. No. Go to Ankwena, go to Nkurenkuru, go to Karas and listen to your people that are on the ground, that are not funded by anybody, that you have risked their own capital. How do they get water? How do they get electricity? How do they get access to the land? What is the transport infrastructure? You know, then once you get those basics, then you get now to formulate the type of ecosystem or the type of laws and policies that you can support the type of ecosystem required by your own people. You have to start at home, because we are making a lot of mistakes where we are listening to more of the foreign investors before we can listen to our own startup in the country. So it's really, really basic. We have to slow down on our policy making and listen to those that are in the entrepreneurship space.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last but not least, we are in a country where we have different sectors, right? And there are those that influence the economic development of the country. So could you perhaps give your own opinion on what sectors within Namibia's startup ecosystem show the most promise for driving sustainable economic development?
Yeah, that one is a mouthful. And I keep saying this, that when it comes to Namibia, for me, every sector is a low-hanging fruit. Every sector is a low-hanging fruit because we have not maximized or get the full potential out of it.
Yes.
If you look at our mining sector, we are only extracting. We are not processing.
Yes.
If you look at our agriculture, we are only growing tomatoes and onions and others, but we are not doing food processing or agro-processing.
Yes.
If you look at the energy sector, we have not tapped on our wind energy. We have not tapped on our solar energy. We have not tapped on our biomass. So there is so much. Almost every sector in Namibia is a low-hanging fruit.
Yes.
So we just need to create the conducive environment to enable the entrepreneurs to start working. From my observation as a researcher or as an observer, I think every sector in Namibia has still so much untapped potential. We just need to unlock it through policies and through capital and through training and through what I call hand-holding approach. Because we do not know so much about entrepreneurship. We just have the gut and the energy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need now is a hand-holding approach from our policymakers and from our bankers and from our investment bankers and from asset managers and from entrepreneurial trainers. To all those that are willing and have good and bankable and feasible ideas to be assisted to unlock this potential. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Erastus, for joining me here in the studio. I hope you have a pleasant afternoon.
Thank you for contacting me, sir.
Let's step away now for a commercial break. We'll be back shortly with more news. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. Residents of Divundu have staged a peaceful demonstration on Tuesday calling for the immediate removal of Athanasius Mangumbo, who is the chief executive officer of the Divundu Village Council in Mukwe constituency, Kavango East region. The protest stemmed from grievances related to alleged unfair land distribution, unlawful land seizure, and lack of consultation or compensation in community relocations. A petition addressed to the governor of the Kavango East region was formally received by Mukwe Constituency Councillor Damien Mahambai. Reading the petition on behalf of the concerned residents, spokesperson Freddy Marando claimed that community members lost their land without prior consultation or fair compensation. He highlighted that some residents were relocated to unserviced areas lacking basic utilities such as water, electricity, sewage, electrification, and roads. Marando further raised health and environmental concerns, stating that a man-made oxidation pod situated near residential areas emits a foul odor affecting the quality of life. He warned that the untreated waste water poses a threat to aquatic life and merges into the main river, which the local people depend on for drinking water and domestic use. He also criticized the CEO for allegedly being inaccessible to residents and failing to engage with the public to address their concerns. In response, Governor of the Kavango East Region, Damien Mahambai, noted that the Divundu Village Council has already disbursed compensation to affected residents. He pointed out that records show the demonstration's lead organizer is among those who received compensation. Damien Mahambai added that compensation efforts began in 2017 and have continued through 2025, with over 100 individuals having been compensated and some still receiving payment. Let's now take a listen to a concerned member, Freddy Marando.
Such as domestic water, sewer, recirculation system, electricity, and loads. Roads. People have been taken to the land where there's no electricity. Some people, you remember, they were removed from the Ministry of Trade land there from 2016 up to now. Very far from there. To come for them to come and fetch water is very distance. Yeah. Fourth, man-made exhaustion ponds among residents which cause the bad odor in all the area. Moreover, it is posing danger to the life of the living organism, like aquatic and merging to the main river where communities are fetching water for domestic use, including drinking. Yeah, this example, we are having a pond here in the middle of the people here. Yeah, there's water, sewage just among the community here. Yeah. The office of the CEO is not open to the public who is resident in Divundu for inquiry purpose or their concern and be addressed. Yeah, our people here, even you have a complaint, even your land are taken. You find that they take your land without consultation. At the same time, when you try to make appointment, they will come to the office of the CEO to make arrangement. They will tell you that you must do what you must do, appointment. You see, it can take more than 3-4 months or a year without you consulting, without attending to your problem. And sometimes what used to happen, some people used to try like to close the road, but it used to end up to find themselves being called to the police that they want to put a case against with you while they are then took the land away from you. Therefore, we are require the matter to be resolved in amicable ways, and we will be very glad if our complaint and concern will be taken into consideration. Yeah, we are also aiming, we want the Minister of Urban and Rural Development to come, Mr. Sangwasa, to come in Divundu. He should come in Divundu. There's corruption in Divundu here. People, we want him to come. I want the Sangwasa to come in Divundu. There's corruption in Divundu. Everyone knows the corruption in Divundu, whether the leader or whoever knows. Yeah, the leader in Ukwe, they know. All the leaders, starting from the regional council, he knows what the problem in Divundu Village Council. We used to try to bring out information, started from 2020. We sit with the regional council, Mr. Mahambai. We sit with all the regional council. We sit with the CEO, bringing our problem, but nothing was happened. But people now, for this time. Because we are very much tied to the truth. Your land, they want to take you in prison. They want to arrest you because of your land was taken into conversation. We have the law in our hands. We are asking the minister to come with them immediately, because we want the CEO to be removed, because everyone knows that he's corruption. We want the CEO of the new village council to be removed with immediate effect, because people are tired. All of them are tired now, because we don't want these people to injure somebody. We don't want that to happen. That's why we come up with this, with peaceful demonstration. Because this is a democratic country, we are having our voice, and our voice should be met. Human rights must be considered. Thanks, please.
Let's now take a listen to Mukwe Constituency Councillor Damien Mahambai.
The village council submit the names to the Minister of Urban and Rural Development, and the Minister of Urban and Rural Development transfer the funds to village council. Like the spokesperson we have just spoken now here, he was compensated starting from on 9 August 2024. He received an amount of $105,571. And again, in 2025, just recently now, let me just look for the name, he received the amount of $187,134. Ndira mwenye zutu kapite ile pamoja tukamwona shine maukufu wetu nje mshaka yako shoni. Ameka ngapo ambashi kata kuna mka demonstrate kata kuna mka shiva ni. Ene ina mkumbuka pana. Mukasi ketu pana. Tudine ushie mashi na tuwana mashere nye itu. Maraka mwando huku ninga shika mwana tije nga njima kara na siyo u. Oine kakara kemo shi. Nika kara kemo. Uduperele. Uduperele. Tukuterele peaceful demonstration yu na mimarai tiangi na kwa amba Yesu ni katoe listi Uterele Mupendi 25 Uwangaha wana masharing Adishi Marando Fredi Dikua 105,571 Tikundeko Beleni Ashuma Yomu nukushana nika ambe Now
And I will pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. When you do return, we shall be bringing you news beyond the borders. Do stay tuned.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hyundai at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond the borders. We're looking at the African Development Bank Group Outlook, Economic Outlook, a grim picture about world economic conditions in South Africa.
That's right, Juliette. A very key issue, of course, is around the economic outlook in the African continent. So speaking about the fragility in terms of the geopolitical environment, but also in terms of the shocks with the tariffs, but also just massive uncertainty in terms of the way forward. And such a very opportune time for this key multilateral institution to delve into these critical issues for Africa to build self-sufficiency, efficiency, but also highlighting a very grim environment in terms of how should the continent really just forge partnerships in terms of making sure that it's able to cushion the very precarious environment it finds itself in, especially some of the major economies being affected, but also
want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further.
Those tariffs that were announced by the Trump administration, but also quite a very optimistic picture being painted here in terms of the resilience of the African continent. As you know, that Gillette, in terms of the fastest growing economies in the world, they're still located in sub-Saharan Africa, really showing a very, very good in terms of the world and also in terms of making sure that the continent to bounce back.
Now, tomorrow is the big day as they elect new leadership, and we'll bring you that story as it develops. And that was our journalist, Kailihle Khumalo, and at the African Development Bank Group, releasing its economic outlook.
On international tax reform summit, it's raising revenue and global inequality.
The Tax Reform Summit has brought together experts, tax justice activists, labor organizations and policymakers to chart a course for a more equitable and sustainable global tax policies. It's hoped discussions will bring about solutions and international cooperation to combat illicit financial flows and corporate tax evasion, as well as to address rampant global inequality. Organizers also hope to be able to contribute to the United Nations Tax Convention, a proposed international agreement aimed at improving international tax policy and cooperation.
The problem that we've had is that the rules that are currently in place have been in place for a very long time. A lot of them were set maybe 100 years ago, a time where most African countries were still colonies. And these rules really don't work to our benefit. A lot of them are based on favoring the countries which export capital, the countries where multinational corporations are based or headquartered. So maybe your European countries, countries like Australia, Canada, they're really the ones who benefit from the current tax rules.
Union Federation SAFTU says the global movement to enforce a minimum 15% tax rate for multinationals aimed at cutting down on tax competition between countries is too low.
Are we going to be critiquing the United Nations Commission on Tax, which is proposing a tax regime tagged at 15%? We believe that that 15% is way too low and is yet another gateway for the corporates to continue profiting but making no contribution whatsoever to the development of the African continent, of the global south, and indeed of every other country in the whole world. So that's our main message, that the 15% is way too low. We are battling with the reports from UNTACT, that as well as the African Union, that indicate that actually through illegal means, illicit cash outflows, mispricing, and all of that, corporates are ripping off the African continent.
Delegates heard that South Africa's G20 presidency provides a window of opportunity on both the national and international levels to push for a fairer global tax system.
It's important to find a common agenda and a common strategy to advance the progressive tax reform together with all the allies from national organizations, civil society, but also trade unions, and then international organizations like ICRIT that can help complement the work that's done at national level. This year is particularly important for South Africa as it hosts the G20. It's also one of the key countries in the UN negotiation for a framework convention, international tax cooperation, and also a member of the BRICS. So there's a number of fora where the South African government can play a positive role to advance tax reform, both to ensure that multinationals pay their fair share and also that the rich pay their fair share.
The summit coincides with South Africa's ongoing national budget debates following delays due to the rejected value-added tax increase. This saw the fuel levy increased, a move SAFTU says will have the same effect on the poor and workers as a VAT increase would have had. Gloria Sefakomosi, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Tanzania unveils its second phase of economic blueprint.
Tanzania's recently launched Mkumbi 2 Blueprint, short form mkakati wa kuendeleza uwekezaji wa biashara na maendeleo ya viwanda. It's the government's strategic roadmap to reshape the investment landscape and boost competitiveness for both local and foreign businesses. The plan outlines a vision for industrial expansion, infrastructure development, and regulatory reform, setting the stage for a more enabling business environment.
This plan will improve our business environment and attract foreign companies to come invest in Tanzania. This will also open up markets for products produced in the country, making Tanzania an attractive place to do business for the world.
Despite a strong GDP growth of 5.5% in 2024, the country is grappling with complex regulatory systems, bureaucratic red tape, and an election cycle that could delay critical reforms. Experts say the economic growth targets are attainable, but the real test lies in implementation.
In order to grow our economy, businesses have to grow and increase, and growth will depend on how favorable our business environment is.
Tanzania's government is targeting six areas for investment improvement: faster business registration, streamlined taxes, clearer land rules, infrastructure upgrades for ports and renewable energy, adjusted local content rules, and modernized digital and financial services. While analysts note inconsistent implementation in the past, business leaders like Yumane Mtambalike are watching for sustainable economic progress.
So to me, I think we are at that time of business unusual, moving these pieces of information from papers, policies and document to actually getting more mechanic and implementing them so that we can attain that number. Are we going to be able to achieve that, the $1 trillion economy, by 2050, according to Vision 2050? Yes, we are capable of doing that. But we need to move from business as usual to business as usual.
Tanzania's economy is increasingly shaped by foreign partnerships with China, India, and the UAE as major investors. The mining sector alone is projected to bring in $6.6 billion by 2027. Tourism continues to grow, drawing over 2 million visitors last year. Still, long-term progress hinges on industrialization, particularly in agriculture, mining, and infrastructure, alongside consistently policy reform. In Dar es Salaam, where the business pulse of the nation beats strongest, investors are closely watching how these plans unfold. The stakes are high because if Tanzania can overcome governance hurdles and reduce red tape, it could become one of Africa's most dynamic economies. But the real test will be in delivery. Daniel Kijo, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Harmony Gold bids $1 billion US to acquire Australia's Mac Copper.
Let's start in commodities. Harmony Gold, which is South Africa's top gold producer by volume, has agreed to buy the Australian miner Mac Copper in a deal worth just over $1 billion as it ramps up its diversification into copper. Joburg-based Harmony Gold is offering $12.25 per share in that cash deal. Now that's a 20.7% premium to the stock's closing price in New York on Friday. In a statement, Matt Copper said its board unanimously backs the offer. The Australian company's CSA copper mine produced about 41,000 metric tons of the metal last year. And Harmony said buying a productive copper mine already brings in immediate cash returns. The African Export-Import Bank has posted a net income of $215 million for the first quarter of 2025. That's 21% higher compared to the same period a year earlier. Earnings were buoyed by higher net interest income and improved liquidity. Now, management says the group results signal a solid start to the year as it deepens its dual mandate of both promoting trade within the African continent as it's expanding its reach into economies in the Caribbean. Net interest income rose by 4.5% to $411.2 million, supported by growth in interest-earning assets and effective cost of funds management. The fossil fuels giant Saudi Aramco is looking to raise funds in a dollar-denominated three-part bond sale. Now, the debt deal will be benchmark size, that's usually considered to be around $500 million. On Tuesday, Aramco management said the indicative price for the five-year part of that debt sale at 115 basis points over U.S. Treasuries. The 10-year and 30-year tranches carry initial price guidance of 130 and 185 basis points, respectively, over the same benchmark. The company last turned to global debt markets in July 2024, when it raised $6 billion from a three-tranche bond sale. And finally in tech, China's Xiaomi has reported record first-quarter revenue and earnings as the company says its ongoing shift towards higher-end products from smartphones to home appliances and even vehicles is paying off. Revenue for the quarter ending on the 31st of March came in at $15.48 billion, up 47% year-on-year and beating the $14.9 billion average of 17 analyst estimates compiled by the London Stock Exchange Group. Adjusted net profit went up by 65% year-on-year to $1.4 billion, ahead of the average estimate of $1.2 billion US dollars. Those are your company headlines on the 27th of May.
Financing challenges shadow Uganda's oil projects.
Uganda companies and SMEs are primed to benefit from oil contracts worth more than $2.1 billion thanks to the local content law that gazettes some aspects of the sector to Ugandans. But have questions around affordable financing been answered?
When the whole journey of oil and gas started in this country, there were lots of concerns. And one of the concerns was that maybe our banks are not that versatile enough. When you go to a bank to ask for any facility, all they will do is throw at you a rule book and say, these are the rules. Please bring this, your mother's baptism certificate, your grandmother's LC1 letter, and all these kinds of things. And then at the end of the day, we will think about giving you a facility. There was also a second concern, which was about the capacity that do our banks in Uganda have the capacity to finance the sector.
Although finance seems to be available, the issue of governance in Uganda's SMEs is still a challenge and a reason why they are stunted.
That we can all get there, but there are uncomfortable things that they will have to do to improve the way they do their businesses. Governance, for example, right? You cannot be the MD, the marketing manager, the human resource head of procurement, head of sales. It's impossible, okay? So certain systems have got to be in place. And that's where, even when we're talking about the oil and gas story, that's where a lot of them are missing out on these great local content opportunities. Because to partner with some of these OMCs, they are not going to compromise at all. When it comes to their standards and procedures, they will not compromise.
Uganda expects more than $15 billion of investment in the sector, and 30% is gazetted for Ugandan companies. However, to unlock the opportunities, SMEs need to strengthen their governance act. Rachel Nabisubi, NTV Business.
And that has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. Do stay tuned for the Onkonaladingi program brought to you by David Shombe. And thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off at 16:30. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and enjoy the rest of your day.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Any person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Ulio mnangeshefa ni wahara kushivitha oma akuro ya kupitira mohoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono rahitatu imwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa kono rahitatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne no la no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye. Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia over...